guest today is Ted Neward. Ted, how are you, sir?
I'm fine. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Excellent.
What do you do?
What do I do?
Yeah, for a living.
Oh, good heavens. What I do basically is stand up in front of large crowds of people and hopefully make them laugh, make them cry, and make them think.
You just did that just now.
Yeah.
And I heard your theory. I actually liked your theory. You talked about the way you phrased it was managers are from Mars,
developers are from Venus.
Talk about the differences and the way that managers think versus the way developers think. Tell me about that.
So the reference, obviously, is to the book around gender relationships of the same name, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. And in the book, he basically talks about how men and women, for whatever reason, societal pressures or what have you, they think differently. They just interact with one another differently. And so, in many respects, I got visitors.
Sorry about that.
Get your own camera flying. The developer community, the people who write code for a living, we look at the world differently than the way the manager community looks at the world. And as a result, we value different things, we expect different things, we're motivated by different things. And so really, if we want to try to achieve some kind of harmony in the workplace, we need to find a way to understand each other in the same way that men and women kind of have to understand each other if they want to have a successful relationship.
Yeah, so I totally agree with that conceptually, but what does that mean in specifics? So what?
So for example, so imagine a project is successful, right? Imagine the project has, you know, it was a year and a half project, what have you. The software shipped. It was more or less what everybody wanted. And the manager wants to reward his developers, right? Because partly because they did a good job and you just want to encourage that. Mm-hmm. Partly because the manager wants to be seen as an effective manager, as somebody that other people will want to come work for, et cetera, et cetera. Sure. For whatever reason, he wants to reward
his
developers.
That's an overloaded term, reward. Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing, right? That's exactly the point. What developers see as a reward is very different from what managers would see as a reward. A manager, for example, typically wants public recognition. He wants the opportunity to stand up in front of his peers and say, yeah, we did it, I led this team, etc. He wants, in some cases, they crave.
For him, that is a reward.
Exactly. That's
so
very much a reward.
His manager would be wise to give him that.
But developers, for the most part, we don't want public recognition. If you stand me up in front of a crowd and everybody applauds me for the good work that I did and you hand me a certificate, I'm actually going to be demotivated. What I want, and this is, again, very different from what managers want, what I want is send me to a training class. Right. Let me go learn that new technology that everybody's talking about. Right. You know, send me to a Node class, send me to an Azure class.
Send me to that conference.
Yeah, exactly. Let me come to the conference and so forth. Give me the opportunity to network with my peers, right? These are not things that managers are motivated by. And the problem here is the basic fundamental psychological principle of we see the world as a reflection, good heavens, we see the world as a reflection of ourselves, right? So if I'm a manager, I assume that everybody else wants the same things that I do.
Sure.
And if I'm a developer, I assume that everybody else wants the same things that I do.
And that's a disastrous approach, really.
Well, it's the same problem as if you have men and women, right? Men want to be rewarded in particular ways, insert your favorite dirty joke here, and women want to be rewarded in certain ways, insert your favorite stereotypical woman joke, right? You know, a woman in some cases feels rewarded by spending time with her husband. A husband sometimes feels rewarded by not having to spend time with his wife, right? Again, I speak of stereotypes,
right.
No offense. But the point here is to assume that the other side of the relationship thinks the same way that you do.
That's a bad assumption.
It's a bad assumption. It sets bad expectations. Right. When your expectations aren't met is when we have stress, and when we have stress is when we dislike our current environment. We want to leave and start over.
Yeah, you broke it up into, you distinguished between, was it motivation and morale?
There's three things, actually. There's motivation, there's morale, and there's job satisfaction.
Yeah, and a lot of people will use those interchangeably, but you're saying they're not the same thing.
Well, and whether we use those exact words, the basic intent here is to say, look, motivation is how I feel about this particular project, right? Boss may give me a project that I don't particularly care for, And yeah, okay, it's maybe it's a batch one-off kind of thing to do a data load or something like that. There's no excitement. There's no challenge.
Right.
My motivation on this project is particularly low. But I like working for this company. Right. This company is a company that treats me well. They do things for me. They reward me correctly, et cetera, et cetera. My morale is high, right? And in some cases, you have the opposite effect, right? The morale within the company is crap. Everybody's like, oh, my God, I should leave this company. This is terrible. Mm-hmm. But I'm working on a really cool project. Mm-hmm. So certainly motivation over the long haul will affect morale, right? Okay. If you have a number of people who are highly motivated, eventually morale will come up.
So it's like a difference of macro versus micro.
In some respects. In some respects. Motivation is generally a project-centric thing, right? So this particular project I may not be excited about, but the next one is really cool because it's going to be doing Node.js in Azure talking to MongoDB, which is like, ooh, lots of EXE. Exactly. You'd be highly motivated to work on that project. Even if the company itself is not a very high morale place, that project would be highly motivating. And then there's job satisfaction, which is we all walk into a job with a certain set of expectations, a certain set of desires. For example, currently I work as an architectural consultant for Nudesic. It's about a 450-strong company based out of Irvine, California. And knowing what I know about job satisfaction and so forth, I said, all right, guys, when I come to work for you, there are certain things that I want to be able to do in order to feel like I'm satisfied, in order to feel like I'm able to do my job. I want to be able to speak at conferences. I want to be able to write articles. I want to be able to consult on particular projects.
Yeah. And you want the company supporting that.
Yeah, exactly. And Nudesic was able to look at that and say, yes, those are all things that we want you to do as well. So here, understanding my job satisfaction and understanding their side of the job satisfaction, we were able to build something that aligned very, very closely.
Yeah.
Ironically,
your boss may not be motivated by those things at all.
Well,
he recognized that you are.
And the interesting thing is, my boss, I mean, she would never want to go stand in front of a room and give a speech. She doesn't really see the excitement. Yeah, exactly. But she recognizes that if my morale is high, then I will in turn say nice things about the company, which I am. I really like working for these guys, more so than I have any other company I've ever worked for.
Sure. Or people will see, Ted's excited. He's a smart guy. I like
And that
smart
acts
guys.
As an implicit endorsement of the company. Yeah. And so, you know, meeting your job satisfaction and morale will have a tendency to go hand in hand.
Okay.
But you can still be. I mean, I know guys working at a large software company in the Pacific Northwest whose name will go unmentioned.
Does it start with an M?
And it ends in Microsoft. their morale is not particularly high, but the company is meeting all of their job satisfaction requirements, and they feel a little conflicted. It's like, I don't know that I would be able to do what I do and enjoy doing at another company. Even though I'm not entirely sure that this company is headed in the right direction, my job satisfaction is high, even as my morale is low, right? A manager wants to understand all three of these things and as much as possible wants to structurally explicitly discuss job satisfaction, right? Are you satisfied with sitting behind a keyboard 8 hours a day slinging code? I have a buddy of mine, that's all he wants to do. Mm-hmm. He wants no lead responsibilities. He wants no design responsibilities. What he wants to do is sit down and sling code. He wants to put on his big old earmuffs, right? His speakerphones, right? Yep. His headphones. He wants to put on his big old headphones and just crank Slayer to 11 and write code. That's all he wants to do. And one of the things that he's had to do at various jobs that he's been in is he's had to basically come in and say, don't promote me.
Right.
Don't promote me. Don't give me technical lead responsibilities. Don't put me in charge of a team. I don't want to do any of that stuff. I just want to write code. If you try to promote me, I'll quit. He's got enough self-awareness to be able to say, this is what makes my job satisfaction high.
Sure.
So
that's these are good lessons for managers to be aware of.
Right.
To be able to perceive that developers are different than they are and
very different
to start thinking about the motivation. What can developers do to make this relationship work better?
Well, there's a couple of things. Number one, again, based on the fundamental principle that everybody sees the world as a reflection of themselves, Developers need to understand that that works against them, right? That a manager sees the world as a reflection of him or herself. And so if a developer wants to be motivated by something, he needs to go to his manager and tell her, hey, if you want to reward me, these are the things that I would like, okay. Right? So if you want me to, like, you know, put in, you know, 10 to 20 hours of overtime a week over the next 3 months, what I would like out of this is a training class.
Right.
Right? Schedule me a training class on company expense time after the project ships. Mm. Right.
In Maui.
In Maui, but okay. Even if it's just, you know, a local, you know, or if it's online training or something, right? Okay. Reward me the way.
I was projecting. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know. And that's fine, right? If you want the Geek Cruise thing, right? One of the things that highly motivates a developer is personal life,
right?
So, you know what, boss? Motivate me by letting me spend time with my family afterwards. I knew a boss. I actually worked for a guy many years ago. And he got that, right? He understood that. And so we were coming up on the deadline, and this is actually Mike Cohn, who's a big agilist, scrum leader, et cetera. Does some great work, does some great books around agile estimating. Agile estimating and planning is one of his books. I worked for Mike before either of us was famous. I had this thing that needed to be done. So I was literally there until 3 o'clock in the morning the night before the big rollout in order to make sure that this stuff shipped. I and the QA director, we both stayed late. And you know what? I looked at the time by the time we were finished and said, you know what? I'm going to have to be back here at, you know, 8 anyway. So I basically, you know, I told Patty goodnight. She walked her out to her car. She drove home. I went back in and I slept under my desk. I just balled up my jacket and, you know, put the backpack underneath it. Turned my chair around, put up a sign, wake at 8 a.m. and crashed out. Mike still tells this story. When I got up and we saw the system go live and I saw that my particular, you know, bit of functionality was working, Mike said, you go home now.
Right.
Don't write anything on the time card. Just, you know, just go home. Because Mike, being an ex-developer himself, kind of understands that you want to give people, you know, the rewards. You want to give them that kind of time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if I needed to take a couple of hours early or I wanted to have a long lunch with my family, he's like, yeah, goodbye. You know, rewarding by personal life is another way that managers can reward developers, right? It's really about, for the developer, it's about going to your manager and saying, these are the things that I want. You give me a certificate and a public recognition ceremony, and I will hate you. I will hate the entire experience. And really, what all of this kind of boils down to is managers and developers really need to communicate better. Right, within gender relationships.
That's the key. They need to know what each other's motivations are.
Exactly. They need to know each other's motivations. They need to know each other's predilections. They need to understand what each one is what each one is required to do. Okay. So, for example, part of the talk, you know, software is a very ephemeral thing. Managers can't look at source code to figure out where the project is or how well it's going. Mm-hmm. Right. All they can see is the running product, and in many cases, what they see. I mean, they can see a web mock-up, but they don't see that the fact, you know, that it's just a mock-up, that it's just a set of static HTML pages, and it's not being stored into a database or anything like that. As a matter mm-hmm. of fact, you know, with a certain amount of skullduggery, you could completely fool people. There's a buddy of mine who was deep into the Borland space who talked about the very first release of Delphi, I think it was. The guy who was giving the presentation, the
wasn't Anders, was it?
No, it wasn't Anders. It was somebody else. And the product was so bad that the version that he had, he could never do all of his demos through without it crashing. So what he did is he recorded a video, right, of each parts, and he spliced the video together. And then he played the video
and pretended to type.
He did a Milli Vanilli, essentially. And the audience was completely fooled. Because we have no visibility beyond what we see there on the screen. As a developer, we can see behind the screen.
It was a short-term solution at best. But
it was. It very much was. And I'm not recommending that to anybody for a demo. But the point is that it's very easy to do this smoke and mirrors thing with respect to software. Managers can't see past the smoke and mirrors because they're not developers.
Right.
So as a developer, we have to understand that managers are required to provide visibility on the project to their superiors. So the smart developer says, hey boss, let me show you what we're doing. Let me tell you what the problem is. Let me give you some way of being able to see how these things are working, right? Let me give you, the agile notion of, shipping every day or every 2 weeks or something like that. Let me give you working software to run with. Let me give you something to give back to your boss. Let me give you some of that visibility, right? Because then the manager is getting his job done.
Right.
But the manager has to also, in turn, be willing to give the developer the room he needs to get his job done, which in some cases means, you know what? The core hours of, let's say, 1 to 5, or the core hours of 8 to 10, or 8 to 11, or 8 to noon, or some core block of time are just you writing code.
Right.
To let you get into that flow state. And in some cases, what I've known developers to do, and I think managers should encourage this, is developers should block out a time. Some people are morning people, and they get all their best work done in the morning. Right. Some people are afternoon people, and they get it done after lunch. Whenever is your most productive time, block that out.
Close your email, shut the door, put the headphones on.
And block it out on the schedule. Yep. Right? So say that you are completely unavailable during that time block, so that nobody will try to schedule a meeting with you, and your manager has to support you in this.
Yeah.
Right? So that you have the opportunity, somebody just sent me an email, so that you have an opportunity to react, right? To basically do that work. And then you say, okay, by the way, mornings, I'm a night owl, right? Mornings are absolutely terrible for me. So it's like from the hours of 8 to noon, you want me to meet? Sure, I'll meet with you, because that requires very little thought, right? Just blah, 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 yeah. I worked on a document, no blocks, there we go. That's my contribution to the stand-up. But then post lunch and then obviously into the evening, right? So what I'll do is,
that's where you're in your flow zone.
Yeah, exactly. Particularly when I'm on the road, I take the backpack, I go over to Denny's, I find an outlet. They have, Diet Coke refills coming all night long. And, that's when I do a lot of my articles. That's when I do a lot of the books, work on presentations, et cetera. So finding a way to get yourself that block of time to get into your flow. Right, as a developer, that's critical. And if managers want to get the most out of their developers, they will give the developer that opportunity. This is, again, all about how do I work with your style and how do you work with mine?
Anything else?
The usual, it was a great talk. And anybody, wants me to do it again should drop me an email.
Yeah, I will. I'm in Detroit.
That's right. You were mentioning the Detroit show. Overall, the key thing I think is to realize that, managers and developers, as much as we get put into confrontational situations, because a manager kind of has to beat the stick over the developers and the developers like, oh my God, managers, you're so stupid. As much as we're ostensibly in a confrontational scenario, if we can turn that around and realize that we are in fact all on the same team and we're all trying to pull in the same direction, we can actually get some amazing stuff done.
Agreed.
And the managers who can reach out and connect with their developers, those are the people that developers will go for the rest of their lives saying, that guy was a guy that I want to work for. I would work for him again any day of the week. Mike Cohn is one of those for me. I would work for Mike any day on any project. Right, and I'm notoriously difficult on bosses.
You?
Oh, yes. In case you hadn't noticed, I kind of have a strong personality.
I'll take your word for it.
I would work for Mike in a heartbeat. I really would, because he got it. He understood. And so the manager who can connect with his developers, who can understand what they're motivated by, he's going to be the kind of guy that developers will go to hell and back for.
Right.
And he will be the kind of leader that developers want to work for.
Ted Neward, thank you so much.
Thank you very much, sir. Cheers. of the things you need to be very careful about as you work with technology is that you don't lose your friends. So make sure you use technology to make friends and don't favor the technology over your friends. This is how technology and friends work together.